Hi, it's Karen Webster for Payments.com, and I'm here today with Philip Andre, who is Vice President of Field Marketing for Ovisar on the payment side. Philip, how are you today? Thanks for joining me.
I'm well, Karen. It's a pleasure to be back with you again.
Always a pleasure to talk to you there, and there's so much to talk about given all of the things that are happening in the space surrounding digital identity and creating and protecting it. So that's what we're going to talk a little bit about today. So let's start out with the basics. When we talk about digital identity, I think those are two words that we use and assume that everyone understands what it means. I'd like to get your perspective, Philip, as an expert in space. What does it mean, and how have those words evolved over the last 5 to 10 years?
It's interesting that we talk about digital identity and recognize that most of the market doesn't comprehend that concept. When I was beginning to think about this years ago, we started by looking at the dictionary and trying to understand that what Webster's and others thought digital identity was. And what's clear is that it's a way that we as consumers, employees, and citizens identify ourselves in cyberspace. And I think back to that lovely cartoon in the New Yorker one time where there's two dogs sitting at a computer asking the question or pondering the subject of, does anybody know that I'm a dog? And our digital identity is how we represent ourselves in this anonymous domain called cyberspace. If we go back and we look at the physical world, we also find that we had a digital identity. I think about the personal account number on our credit card, the PAN. I think about the international bank account number or the IBAN, or I think about our social security number, which were originally simply unique numbers that we used to identify ourselves so that a computer could link that identity to data that it stored on a database or to rights that it provided, for example, the ability to use a line of credit or to withdraw funds from our bank account. What's intriguing with all of that is those things should never have become secrets, and they became secrets because we allowed them to become something that not only identified us, but was used to authenticate that we were the rightful owner of that identity.
Well, I want to pick up on two things that you said, and first offer a thank you. I am delighted that when you first started thinking about this, you consulted Webster. Just kidding, Philip.
Absolutely.
But what makes this so complicated is, you know, let's sort of take off our payments expert hats and put on our consumer hats. When we think about how we identify ourselves online, we probably think of multiple identities and how we identify ourselves online. None of them are perhaps connected. So there's an identity, perhaps a way that we log into our social networks. There's a different profile that we log into our bank account, yet another when we log into our corporate email account. How does one think about digital identity when there are so many digital identities that an individual consumer has?
And I think that is the challenge. And as I was thinking about this subject, again, I kept reflecting between the physical world and the virtual world, this world of the internet, this world of cyberspace. And I thought about the identity I use in old-fashioned snail mail. It's my name. It's my address. That identifies who I am to somebody who wants to mail myself something. When I start moving into the virtual world and I still use that mail analogy, I now have an email address that follows a particular structure that was defined by an international standard that I use a moniker to identify myself. And maybe I call myself Balloon123 or P. Andre or K. Webster. I create this moniker and then I tie that moniker to a domain that's going to host my email services. When I think about social websites, maybe I'm going to call myself by my first initial last name. Maybe I'm going to use a jumble of letters and digits, some string of data that a computer, that service, is going to recognize me by. Where we get in trouble is when I, as the relying party, and we need to start putting names to parties in the ecosystem, there's me, the identifying party, and there's the relying party, the bank, Facebook, Google, the government, Instagram, whoever that system is, that party that I want to employ services of. So in a social network, I want to be able to go tweet. I will create a moniker. And that moniker, that username, becomes how they recognize me. Challenge then becomes, if my moniker is stolen by somebody else, if my password gets found by somebody else, they then, for all intents and purposes, become me. And they can then do nefarious things. They can start tweeting in my name and creating interesting challenges, or they could start using my credit card if they are able to get my PAN, my password, my expiry date, my CVV. They can gather data about me and use those identifiers to do things that I don't want them to do. And that's the challenge we have with this digital identity, is how do we authenticate that you are the rightful user of that identity? And that's where we get into words like authentication.
So how are you at Obisur thinking about this? I mean, I take the point that authentication is where literally the rubber meets the road, and all of these, as you call them, relying partners need to be able to do that with certainty and be able to detect when the bad guys have taken my digital identity and are using it improperly. How are you looking at this and trying to help these relying partners do that better?
So again, if we start in the physical world, we are helping the banks issue EMV cards, which are a means of providing that digital identity and then authenticating that the instrument is authentic. If we move to the government, with the U.S. government, we are providing the PIV cards that provide that digital identity and then prove that the holder of that digital identity is who they claim to be. If we move into the social space, we then embrace what we're doing with the FIDO Alliance, where we're looking at creating an authenticator, a set of standards that can be used by various parties to create mechanisms of authenticating that the person holding that thing, that secure element, is the rightful user of that secure element. So we end up looking at basically three words. We look at, how do I identify myself, a username? How do I authenticate that I have the possession of the device, the thing that carries that username? So it's something physical, a token, a phone, a FIDO authenticator. And then how do I verify that I own that thing, that it wasn't stolen and was being used by somebody else? Where we get into PIN, we get into biometrics, we get into passwords. So we're working on an international scale to define these standards. In the case of the U.S. government, the PIV standard. In the case of payments, the EMV standard. In the case of almost everything else, the FIDO standards.
So the EMV standard I get in the physical world, but the world is moving to the digital world where, you know, things are digital opportunities for engagement are just proliferate. It didn't ever used to be that we had to think about dash buttons, for example, on washing machines becoming points of sale, literally, engaging with transactions, cars becoming devices that initiate transactions. I mean, there's massive explosion of opportunities for identities to be everywhere. How do you think about that? And is it possible to imagine an environment where there's one digital identity that we use that can be secured and protected, that kind of follows us along wherever in the digital world we happen to go?
I'm not sure we can look at digital identity as that one thing, because my employer is going to define my digital identity and they're going to call me PHILANDR. My email supplier is going to define my digital identity, my email address. The government is going to define my digital identity, the social security number. What we need to do is we need to produce something that I can link myself as a human being to that identifier that that relying party wants to use. And that's where the FIDO authenticator comes in. It's a device, a thing, a phone. And if we think about Apple Pay, what Apple Pay has done is it said, I'm going to stick a secure element inside that device where I'm going to put that identity, the PAN, the DAN, the digital account number, and I'm going to use that to identify what the payment mechanism is. Okay, great. That's a publicly available number. It's just a random set of digits. But then I'm going to use the EMV standard in the physical world and the EMV standard with 3D Secure in the virtual world when I talk about in-app. And I'm going to use the cryptographic capabilities of the secure element to create a dynamic value that says, I, this physical secure element, tied to that identity, am unique. So therefore, you, Mr. Relying Party, who recognize my digital identity, now can accept my authenticator, my cryptogram, as demonstration that I am in possession of that which you gave me, a card, a phone, an ID card.
So is it then your position that EMV standard is the foundation for the enablement of digital identity? And I'm speaking obviously in the realm of payments and commerce. Is the foundation for digital identity when transacting across all of these channels via tokenization and tokenized identity?
Yeah, in the credit card, debit card world, mm-hmm. yes, EMV will become the mechanism that defines the cryptographic dynamic token that will allow the authentication that it came from that unique phone, that unique card, be it in the physical world or in the virtual world. And that's payments, credit and debit. When we move into the ACH world, the clearinghouse environment, the world that faster payments is creating, it probably won't be EMV, but it will be a form of cryptography. So cryptographic processes, public key cryptography, this thing called asymmetric cryptography will get employed to do that. And that could end up being a FIDO authenticator using the FIDO standards. If I move to government and I move to enterprise, the government has defined the PIV standard, which has a very high level of identity proofing. Well, that same technology that sits inside the PIV card also sits inside a secure element in a mobile phone and can be used in another format, which is called CIV, for civilian identity and verification, which has a different level of proofing defined by the relying party. So I can use that same technology, that same standard, implemented by a different party to identify an individual, an employee, a contractor, to an enterprise, to a corporation. So we then create something there. We could take ICAO, the International Passport Standard, the e-passport, and it could become an identifier. We could decide that we want to take a driver's license and use the International Driver's License Standard to create a unique authentication of the driver's ID. So that, again, is another digital identifier. You know, you could start using your driver's license number as your digital identifier, but I need to be able to authenticate that you have the right to use that number. You have possession of something that is unique, a token, a card, a phone.
And let me ask you just a final question, though. We've talked a lot about EMV and physical world, and we've kind of bounced back and forth between that and digital. I want to talk about what you guys are doing with Samsung Pay, specifically their launch in Europe. Help us understand Obisir's role in enabling that launch in Europe.
So in the case of Samsung Pay, what's happened is Samsung has seen us as a valuable partner with very strategic relationships with financial institutions throughout Europe. Samsung also saw that we had built what was called the Trusted Service Manager, or the TSM, for the mobile ecosystem and then deployed it around the globe and in particular with Visa and with other organizations on a global scale. And what they recognized is they needed a party that the financial institutions trusted, Obiter, who could establish the relationship from a technical perspective between the secure element, which is called Pearl, which is an Obiter product that is embedded inside the Samsung phone, and the financial institution. So what will mechanically happen is a consumer will identify, I want to put this card in that phone. We will receive a request from Samsung and we will request to the issuing party that we will establish a relationship with, can we, on your behalf, install the appropriate credentials based on EMV into that Samsung phone so that it can be used at the point of sale through a contactless interface or through an in-app implementation on the web. So we become the enabler for, and if you think about the United States and you think about what Visa and MasterCard is doing, we are standing up an equivalent service to what they stood up here. We're not using tokens like we all talk about tokens. We're using what we call a companion account number. And if you think about what the DAN is, it's just another PAN. But in Europe, it was understood that a wife and a husband and a daughter and a son all had different card numbers attached to the same account number. So we're just going to create another device number, and we're going to attach that to the Samsung phone, and we'll attach it ultimately to wearables. And, you know, Karen, you'll be able to have a different wearable for to match whatever you're wearing today that will each have its own companion account number.
I love it. More accessories to buy. It sounds like right up my alley. Well, it's certainly an exciting time to be talking about all of these concepts, which all come together around this new opportunity to have commerce in a digital environment, whether that is a mobile phone in a physical store or whether that is a mobile phone inside an app or on the browser, and the importance of sorting out the issue of digital identity and how to keep it secure. So, look, it's always a pleasure talking to you. I learn a lot. Thanks very much for joining me today.
Thank you, Karen. It's always a pleasure to exchange with you.